No man is an island, and all of us are called to recognise our interdependence in the global community, especially in these times of economic crisis. From the divided island of Cyprus, where the Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities have been separated since 1974, religious leaders from across the world this week came together to issue a joint appeal for peace, dialogue and solidarity with the poor, who are suffering the brunt of the worldwide recession. The bishops, imams, rabbis and representatives of other major faith communities were meeting in Cyprus from November 16th to 18th for the annual Forum of Prayer for Peace, organised by the St. Egidio community, following in the spirit of the first interfaith day of prayer for peace in Assisi, called for by Pope John Paul II in 1986. One of the regular participants at these annual encounters is the former Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. During a break between sessions, I asked him how he believed these annual prayer encounters could influence efforts towards political solutions in Cyprus or other neighbouring Middle Eastern countries.
Philip, I think in two ways. One way is that it focuses on the problem. And sometimes the world does not focus on problems which are in little corners of the world, such as this island in the Eastern Mediterranean. But I think the presence here of leaders from many countries of the world, of many of the prelates from the Orthodox churches representing the great churches of the Orthodox, and many cardinals and bishops from the United States, as well as the very distinguished leadership of the community of San Egidio, the fact that they're all here means that folks like you are going to give publicity to it, and that will focus on it, and I think it will make the world more conscious and maybe even get the United Nations more involved, although they do have troops there now, but get them more involved in this important crisis, which has gone on now for 30 years. And so that it focuses on it. It doesn't let us forget it. And then secondly, we all come to pray. And, you know, I'm so convinced that prayer is the most powerful thing we can do. And that's what we've been doing, you know, praying not just for Cyprus, but in a special way for Cyprus. We're praying for peace throughout the world and for justice and for people who suffer. I think that all those things, that when you focus on peace, when you focus on justice and when you bring people together and bring your prayers to the Lord, I think it cannot but be helpful.
You've been involved for many years also in the dialogue in the Holy Land with religious leaders, trying to bring them closer together and to impact in some way on the political process there. What are your hopes now for Israel, for Palestine, following also on the election of Barack Obama, of course, as the next president of the United States?
Well, of course, this is the moment where we have so many hopes and not too many answers. Israel is about to have another election. We don't know how that is going to go. We hope that there will be someone dedicated to a two-state solution. We're not sure what President Obama's position is going to be. We hope that he will continue, as did President Bush, to work for peace and justice in the Holy Land and a two-state solution. So we're in a difficult period now. It's a period of grays, and we don't know. There are very few blacks and white there. And so we're going to hope that the leadership of our country, United States, and the leadership of the Holy Land and the leadership of both Israel and the Palestinian Authority will be able to continue the work that was begun and that was begun with great dedication by Secretary Rice and by the President and by others in the United States. I think this is a moment when we could really move forward with great enthusiasm, and that's what we pray for. But it's also realistically a moment where these great hopes could be put on the back burner, and that would be a terrible disaster for the world.
Do you think it's a moment in which the religious leaders could perhaps have more of an impact on the political process? Are you involved in any particular initiatives at the moment to try and make that happen?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that we're working with the Council of Religious Institutions, which involves all the leadership of the of the three great religions, they're the ones who really have to do the work. They're the ones who have to put pressure on their own governments and their own religious leadership. And so I think a lot of things are happening there. I have great confidence in this Council of Religious Institutions. All the patriarchs are there, the chief rabbis are there, the heads of the Sharia courts are there. So that, and they're talking to each other. Maybe they can be a stimulus to get the political leadership to start talking to each other and to make the same kind of good relationships on which peace is built.
Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, former Archbishop of Washington, D.C. Another powerful appeal for peace and dialogue at the Cyprus meeting came from former Colombian presidential candidate Ingrid Betancourt, who was held hostage for 6.5 years in the jungle by the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC as they're known. She was freed along with 14 other hostages in July of this year. Vatican Radio's correspondent in Cyprus, Nathan Morley, asked Betancourt about the importance of the St. Egidio meeting in promoting dialogue and reconciliation in places of violence and conflict.
Very interesting. I had met people that in another occasion I would never have met, and that had brought to me another vision of things. You know, normally when I speak about the world and how I foresee things, I always speak in a very different point of view. And when I speak about spirituality, I always feel alone, because I know that people find that a little bit weird, you know, to just talk about those things.
I know the meeting was a great success. Did you discover whilst you were here on the island anything about Cyprus and the ongoing division of the island?
Well, about Cyprus, the first thing that really impressed me was how wounded the Cyprus are by the division of the country. In a way, you always think when you're abroad that because those things happened so long time ago, like that people will, you know, just live with it. And what I found here is that really the wound is profound, and that there is a sadness, there is a need to get that wound healthy in a way, to make something to erase that sadness. But it's strange, because I didn't see In any of the people that talked about this with me, Cyprus people that talked with me about this, I didn't see, like, anger or thirst of revenge. That's something that I think it's very important, because when people can just overcome that bitterness and just say, look, the important is to find a solution, but we don't want to get back to anybody. We just want to make it right. I think that's the best way to go.
I know that it's only been since July that you've been free. How has adapting to being a free person, living your life as you want to, been? Has it been difficult for you this past few months?
Well, it's, of course, a change of everything. I think that the important thing for me has been to always have the parallel between what I'm living and what I lived. The things that I have every day that for everybody are granted, for me are not. And because they are not for me, that gives me the strength to fight for the others that remain in the jungle. And that's something very important for me. For example, when I have breakfast and that I can choose what I want to eat, and that it's something so that gives me so much pleasure, then I remember that in the jungle we had nothing. So, for example, a bathroom, when I go to a hotel and, like, here in Cyprus, I have the bathroom in the room, those are things that always are granted for everybody. For me, no, because I couldn't go. I didn't have water when I would wake up. I had to ask permission to go to the bathroom, which wasn't a bathroom. It was a hole in the ground. So, and I had to queue for that, because all my other fellow hostages would be in the same situation. So everything was difficult and hard. And when I get up in the morning and I rush to the bathroom, I want just to remember that is something that is a privilege. Those things are very important.
So would your future plans now, I mean, looking ahead, involve re-entering politics, maybe running for president?
Look, I think I'm doing politics every day, but I'm doing the politics I like, which is the politics of the heart, the politics of the truth, without bindings, without interest, without having to compromise, having to be opportunistic or lie. And, you know, I don't want to get into the politics I discovered in Colombia. It's a politics of treasons, of calculations, of ego trip, so little of serving and giving. And I don't feel comfortable in that kind of game. So I prefer to be outside and to do my best to help my people in Colombia, but in a way that I feel free, totally free, because I think I deserve that, to be totally free.
Former hostage and Colombian presidential candidate Ingrid Betancourt was talking to Vatican Radio's correspondent in Cyprus, Nathan Morley, at the conclusion of the Saint Egidio Interfaith Forum.